It's time for ER 101 with expert guests provided by the American College of Emergency Physicians. Here's Dr. Lee Vinoker.
Hi, and welcome back to ER 101. We're talking about spring break and the dangers of spring break, and one of the unintended consequences of spring break with girls and boys gone wild are sexually transmitted diseases. It's one of the risky behaviors that people can engage in when they're intoxicated and really don't have good judgment. So I want to welcome my next guest, who is an expert in this field. Dr. Greg Moran is a clinical professor of medicine at UCLA School of Medicine. He's board certified in emergency medicine, internal medicine, and infectious disease, and he's faculty in both the Department of Emergency Medicine and the Division of Infectious Disease. Dr. Moran, thank you so much for being here.
Hi, glad to be here.
So we have been talking a little bit, and certainly, the behavior that these college students exhibit when they're on spring break, because they're obviously intoxicated. I saw one report that on average, boys will drink 18 drinks in a day during spring break, and girls 10 drinks a day. I mean, that's just incredible to me. So one of the risky behaviors that these kids engage in is unprotected sex, let alone the potential for being raped or something when you're in that state. So let's talk about some of the things that they have to be careful for. What do we most commonly see with college-age kids and sexually transmitted diseases?
Well, there are a number out there that are still relatively common and still being passed around, and you're exactly right. You've already pointed out in the previous segment some of the dangers of alcohol use and how judgment goes out the window. And it is true that sometimes young people, when they're in that situation where they're intoxicated, sometimes will do things that they maybe wouldn't otherwise do, or maybe wouldn't be as prepared and take the precautions that they otherwise would. And there are a number of things that they'll put themselves at risk for. Some of the more common ones that are out there are chlamydia and herpes simplex. So chlamydia is a bacterial infection. It is still pretty common, even though it's not the one that often is in the front of people's minds. People, when they think about sexually transmitted diseases, often think about sort of the old-fashioned ones like syphilis, gonorrhea. Those things are still out there. They're not quite as common. And we'll talk a little bit about gonorrhea. That one maybe is making a little bit of a comeback in some ways.
Oh, how great.
But chlamydia is very common. In fact, rates have been going up, even though for many sexually transmitted diseases, rates have gone down in the last few decades. Rates of chlamydia infection have actually gone up, and particularly in women, they've gone up.
Yeah, do you think it's because somewhere I read a statistic that there's hardly any symptoms. It can also be asymptomatic completely, so people don't even realize. I mean, I saw something that it said one in every four college student has some STD. Is that true? Wow.
That is true. And when you look at prevalence rates among women for chlamydia, and you're right, these symptoms are less severe in women, and it's more likely for women to be infected and be unaware of it than men. Men, it tends to cause symptoms more often, so they'll more often seek treatment. But because the symptoms can be more subtle in women, they're less likely to seek treatment. And in some studies where they look at prevalence, if you take women in the 18 to 24 age range and just study them randomly, you can find more than 10% in a number of series. We found that more than 10% of women in that age group in the U.S. are infected with chlamydia. And wow. When you look at herpes simplex, the rate is even higher. It's estimated about 1 in 5 sexually active adults in the United States are infected with herpes simplex type 2, which is the genital herpes strain.
But now that does have symptomatology, correct? I mean, people, especially with the first infection, what symptoms should people look out for, or college students look out for?
Well, typically herpes is symptomatic, and most individuals will get symptoms, especially with that initial infection. Not 100%. There actually are a few percent that will not have symptoms, even with that first infection. But most will have symptoms. Herpes is a disease that causes blisters. They tend to get small painful blisters or a cluster of blisters that will occur in the genital area where they get infected, and then they'll turn into a small ulcer. Typically, it's painful. Now, that will run its course. Typically, those blisters, the ulcer, will heal up over a couple of weeks, but it is known that even during times where the blisters are not apparent, people can shed virus. Now, it is true that they will shed more virus if there's an active outbreak, if there are active blisters, active ulcers. It's far more likely to transmit infection during that period. But it is known that individuals who are infected can shed virus even during periods in which they're not symptomatic. So just not having an active outbreak at the time does not necessarily mean that an individual is not going to be spreading herpes to their partner.
Wow. And then another very common, I read that chlamydia, herpes, and there's a third very prevalent STD in college-aged kids is the HPV, human papillomavirus. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, human papillomavirus is extremely common. Many patients with that will be asymptomatic. And in women in particular, the big risk of HPV is causing cervical cancer. And if you look at women who have had more than four sexual partners in their lifetime, then the risk of infection with HPV is extremely high. It's 90% plus. Now, there is a vaccine that came out just a few years ago, the Gardasil vaccine, that does protect against those strains of HPV that are most associated with cervical cancer. And so the younger generation of women now who had that opportunity to get Gardasil may be protected against that. It's even recommended for males to get it, actually more for the protection of their female partners or their future partners.
That herd immunity. But also there's an increased risk we're seeing now of head and neck cancers in young men in their 40s that were positive for HPV. So there is some protection for men too, or boys too, wouldn't you agree?
Yes, you're right. The benefit is relatively greater in women, but you're right that men can be at some risk of that as well. Now, papillomavirus can cause genital warts, so there are some individuals who will be symptomatic who may have visible warts that will appear, but actually that's only a fraction of the people who are infected. Most people infected with HPV have either no symptoms or may have minimal symptoms that they may not even notice. The bigger problem with that is the risk that they are put at on the line, and particular women to get cervical cancer.
Yeah, and that's good. So let's talk about number one, prevention, besides, you know, lecturing your kids on spring break not to get, you know, overly intoxicated so that they're in situations that they don't, not in their right mind. But the number one thing that kids can do, too, for protection is always use condoms. Is that the best way?
Yes, barrier methods are still best at preventing infections, and condoms are effective. Now, they're not 100% effective. No method is completely 100% effective, but they are very highly effective. They can prevent chlamydia. They can prevent gonorrhea. They can prevent many of these infections. Herpes, they can reduce somewhat, maybe slightly less effective at preventing herpes transmission just because there may be other contact that sometimes can cause spread of that virus. Mm-hmm. But they are highly effective at reducing transmission, and certainly it's recommended that if an individual is going to put themselves in a circumstance where they may be having sexual contact with a new partner, that they prepare ahead of time. Make sure you have the condoms available. Make sure that it's readily available so that even if you're in a circumstance where maybe there's alcohol involved, where it's going to be so readily available and handy so as not to be an obstruction. Knowing that many individuals are going to be in a situation where there may be alcohol involved, you just want to prepare ahead of time when you're not intoxicated so that when the situation arises, then they're prepared for it. And so they're not going to find themselves in a situation where they may be doing something against their better judgment.
Right, absolutely. And you know, talk to your kids about it openly. Don't beat around the bush. It's very important. So I want to thank Dr. Moran